an Osho Talk. From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, number 20.
Are you the world teacher?
I'm not even a primary school teacher. And you are asking about being a world teacher. But this foolish idea of being a world teacher is very ancient in India. Shankara, Ramanuja, Vallabha, Nimbarka, and hundreds others down the ages have claimed that they are the world teachers. It's strange. They have never gone out of their small states, not even all over India. They don't know anything about the world, but they are claiming they are world teachers. The world knows nothing about. The world has not accepted them. How can they be world teachers? But they had found a logical basis for it. And they were all agreed upon it. That was, whosoever wins in debating theological, philosophical questions, interpreting the so-called holy scriptures, whoever wins in these debating competitions the defeated one has to accept him as his teacher, and then that winner will go around the country challenging every other person who was pretending to be a world teacher. If he was defeated, then of course he had to accept the other person as a world teacher. If he was a winner, the other will follow him as a disciple. These people used just logical, linguistic discussions to decide Who is the world teacher? Now to win in a logical discussion is a childish game. You may not have experienced anything, yet you can be a good logician. You may not know anything at all about the truth, but you can argue well. That is a totally different quality. In Greece, these people were called sophists. By and by, they became condemned. In the beginning, they were respected just like the world teachers of India. The work of the sophist was to argue. And to teach how to argue. An argument is simply a game, just like chess. It has nothing to do with truth. Nobody has ever achieved to truth by argumentation. Yes, you can defeat somebody. Even you can defeat the person who may have experience. If you are articulate enough and can bring language and logic in your support, there is no difficulty. By the time Socrates arrives on the scene in Greece, the sophists were all over. It was Socrates who condemned sophistry. He said, I can argue from any side. You tell me to be for God or to be against God. And I can argue from any side. And I'm going to win. And he showed it. He will argue from both the sides, and from both the sides he will win. Then he said, what is the meaning of all this argumentation? I know it because it happened to me. While I was a student in the university, I loved the only game, and that was argument. I hated every other game because all other games look very childish. If you know argumentation, then there is no game compared to it. And I was going from one university to another university for debating, for eloquence competitions. In Nagpur University, it happens. Always two persons used to go, one person with me, one for, one against the subject. The person who has gone will speak against the subject, suddenly became sick. It was time to go to the university auditorium, and he was having diarrhea. And he said, it is impossible, I cannot make it, I cannot go. I cannot remain even 5 minutes in the room, and I have to run to the bathroom. How I am going to wait there for 3 hours continuously, 4 hours? And one never knows when our number is to come. Impossible. So I said, you don't be worried, I will take care. He said, how you are going to take care? You will see. I was for the subject. This was my approach always, that whoever was going with me, it was a competition first in the affiliated colleges. You have to win from all the affiliated colleges, then the university competition, your own university competition, you have to win that, then 2 persons will be chosen. Then they have to decide whether one is going to be far and the other is against. It was always troublesome because people wanted the stronger side. With me it was never a problem. I always told them, you choose the side you want to be, and the remaining one is mine. But they said, it never happens. People fight, and then we have to draw chits for and against, or we have to go to the Vice Chancellor to decide. With you it is so simple, you allow us. What is the secret? I said, there is no secret. If you know how to argue, it does not matter for what you are arguing. If you don't know how to argue, then too it does not matter. I was speaking far. I spoke far. Then was the number of my opposite colleague. His name was Karl. I stood up and went to the opposite side. The Vice Chancellor of Nagpur University was presiding. He said, what? You have just spoken far, and now you are standing against. I said, what can I do? The man who was to speak against is suffering from diarrhea. It is not my fault. And for me there is no problem. But he said, just now you have spoken far. I said, yes, I have spoken far. Now listen me against too. You forget that I am the same person. Why bother about the person? You have to listen to the argument. Who is arguing should not be your concern. Your concern should be for the argument. He said, okay. I argued against. I won both the prizes. Against, I won the first prize. Far, I won the second prize. And I told to the Vice Chancellor, look, what do you say now? Of course, when I was arguing for somebody else, then I did my best. When I was arguing for myself, I knew perfectly well that I am going to be first, so who bothers? But I am neither for nor against. I am absolutely neutral. It is just a game. And you are taking it so seriously. That's what Socrates did in Greece. And sophistry, because of Socrates, a single man's understanding, experience, awareness, condemned the whole development, and it was almost 1,000-year-old development of sophistry. And they were very respected people. Kings will send their princes to learn sophistry. And the function of the master to teach that how you can argue from any side and yet win. He was not concerned about truth. The concern was winning, conquering. Socrates condemned sophistry. That your approach should not be for conquering, for winning. You should approach to know the truth. You are using even the name of truth to fulfill your ego desire. But in India, the same sophistry has continued even today. Of course, it is not called sophistry. The word was beautiful. It comes from Sophia. Sophia means wisdom. It was not wisdom. What was happening in the name of wisdom was just stupidity. Good to play a game, but not to find out and seek the truth. Sophist was respected before Socrates. But after Socrates, the very word became so condemned. And Socrates proved it so basically and finally that after him in the West, that game completely stopped. Philosophers continued to argue, but argument was not to win, but to discover. And this is a totally different attitude, but in India it has continued even today. Still there are Jagat Gurus. Jagat Guru means world teacher. The world teacher is simply a translation of Jagat Guru. And you will be surprised that there are many world teachers in India. Every Shankaracharya is a world teacher. Because the original Shankaracharya was really a sophist. He went around the country 1,000 years before, defeated all known, respected philosophers, scholars, anybody who had any claim to know. He defeated from one corner to another corner. His disciples wrote the book Shankar Digvijay, Shankara's World Conquest. But that was their world. He conquered Buddhists, Jainas, atheists, and different interpreters of Vedas, and he became the most famous world teacher. The world knows nothing about. But just like a frog in a small well thinks this is the whole world, for Shankara, India was the whole world. Outside India, the people were not real human beings. The condemnation in Shankara's mind is the same which India has carried for 10,000 years. Outside India, whoever lives is subhuman. India is the chosen race, the Aryans. Adolf Hitler got the idea of Aryans from India. He got the symbol swastika on his flag from India. It is an Indian symbol, one of the most ancient symbols of India. And the word Aryan is Indian. And certainly, basically, all the Europeans have come from the same race as the Indians. It is proved by their languages, because all these languages, German, English, French, Italian, Spanish, Dutch, Swedish, all have their roots in Sanskrit. From 30% to 70%, the words are derived from Sanskrit roots. That simply means that originally all these people have come from the same stock. So Germans are Aryans. But the idea that Aryans are the chosen ones also comes from India. That's why there was a great sympathy in India for Adolf Hitler For two reasons, India was against the British, because they were enslaving it for three centuries, exploiting it. And Adolf Hitler now was promising that India is the homeland of the Aryans. So one of the greatest Indian leaders, Subhas Chandra, escaped from India, reached Germany, and Adolf Hitler has never received and welcomed anybody else like Subhas. And he was nobody. He has escaped from the British jail. What Adolf Hitler had said receiving Subhas Chandra is worth remembering. He said that I am the leader of a small group of Aryans. This man, Subhas Chandra, comes from the original Aryan home. I represent only a small fragment. He represents the whole Aryan race. Give him the respect that he deserves. It was Adolf Hitler who sent Subhas to Japan to attack from the other side. The idea that you are special needs some way to prove it. An argumentation is a very sophisticated way to prove. The sword is not a very sophisticated way to prove that you are true. But argument is. It looks very cultured. But deep down, the game is the same. Just the same ego. The same trip. It is unfortunate that in India no Socrates happened. I have been meeting these world teachers. And they have become so settled with the idea of their being world teachers. Now, it is inherited. When one Shankaracharya dies, he writes a will for somebody else to succeed. And that one becomes a world teacher, not even winning a single person in debate. And I have been discussing with many of these world teachers. They have forgotten completely what argument is. I am reminded with one Jagat Guru, with one world teacher, I came in conflict. That was my first conflict with a Shankaracharya. In a world religions conference, he was telling a simple story, a very simple story, which I had used many times before, and I have nothing against this story. The story is beautiful and significant to explain certain truth, but it was not a question of truth. The way he was speaking was that he is the world teacher. He told the story. The story you may have heard. 10 blind men cross a river holding each other's hand. When they reach to the other side of the river, one of them said, "It is better to count. We are blind. Somebody may have been left in the river. The current was strong. Somebody may have gone with the river. So let us count." And they started counting. One tried, there were 9. Because he started counting from the other person by his side, excluding himself. Of course, he came to the number 9. The second one tried, again 9, then they became very much afraid. One man is lost. The third tried, again there were 9, it was settled. One is lost. One man sitting by the side was watching the whole thing. He laughed at the foolishness of these blind people. He came close to them and said, "What is the problem? Why you are crying and weeping?" They said, "We have lost one of our friends. We were 10, now we are only 9. One person has been taken away by the river." The man must have been a very non-serious, joyful man. He said, "You do one thing, stand in the line and count the way I tell you. I will hit on one person's head. He has to say 1. Then I will hit twice on the second person's head. He has to say 2. Then I will hit thrice on the third person's head. He has to say 3. They said, "This is perfectly right." And of course, there were 10. They all fell into his feet and said, "You saved us." This is an ancient story. Perhaps one of the most ancient collection of stories, Panchatantra. You know, in the West, Aesop's fables, they are derived from Panchatantra. All the stories of Aesop are very ancient. In fact, there has never been such a person as Aesop. Panchatantra is at least 5,000 years old. It has all the fables that Aesop has and many, many more. Buddha loved to explain matters through fables, so he used from Panchatantra. In the West, by and by, as people came hearing from Buddha. First, Buddha's name became Bodhisattva. And from Bodhisattva, where it became Aesop, is still not known. But it is Buddha's name that turned into Aesop. Fables. Those all fables are there. This one is not in Aesop's fables. This is one of the most significant. For 5,000 years, the wise man has been telling that remember that you have to start counting from yourself, that you are the first and foremost responsibility. Remember that the other is number two. The other can never become number one. There is no way. And the other is available to your eyes, to your senses. The other is an object there outside, visible, tangible. And you are inside where your senses don't reach. So there is every possibility to forget yourself, not to count yourself. I had used the story myself many times. But that day, it was a question of argument. And the hearty way the Sankaracharya was telling, I had to stand up and I said, the whole story is absurd. At least there were 50,000 people. There was a shock. I was absolutely unknown in Punjab at that time. That was my first entry into Punjab. And Punjabis and Sikhs, dangerous people. And to challenge their Jagat Guru, there was pin drop silence. The Jagat Guru asked, he must have thought nobody can prove this story absurd. In 5,000 years, not a single person has questioned it. he said, you come on the microphone and prove that the story is absurd. I said, it is so simple, it needs no proof. How these people knew that they were 10? They must have counted before they entered the river. And if they can count rightly before they enter the river, this is strange, that after getting out of the river, they forget counting. You tell me how they came to know that they are 10. No, he was in a shock how they came to know. If somebody else had counted, then too they would have known that how counting is done. Now they know. Gotten hit on the head by a man. Now they know what was missing. They were not counting themselves. If somebody else had counted, then too they would have known. If they knew themselves how to count, what happened in that small river? Their arithmetic went with the current. You have to answer that first, otherwise the story is absolutely absurd. He could not answer, he started trembling. He was an old man, died after 3 months. He became so angry that I said to the people, look, he is so angry. So all this wisdom and that peace and that silence, where it has gone? With the arithmetic of those 10 blind people, he is the 11th blind. He became so much violent that he thought that if he remains there on the stage, he may say something or do something or attack me. So he simply jumped out of the stage and left, and I said, look, he's escaping. This is your Jagat Guru, the world teacher. He cannot explain a simple story which he had raised. What to say about other things? But this is the way sophistry functions. It can prove anything right, it can prove anything wrong. In Jabalpur, where I was for at least 20 years, there was a Sankaracharya, a Jagat Guru, a world teacher. And he lived just very close to me. So once in a while, I used to harass him. Whenever I will see that there are people there, I will reach. And the moment I will reach, he will say, 2 days meeting is dispersed. I will say, whether you disperse the meeting or not, you cannot disperse me. I am going to remain and have few arguments with you. I told him that nobody knows you in the world, and still you call yourself world teacher. Do you have any grounds for it? He said, I don't have any grounds for it. But don't raise such questions before public. They don't understand. I said, yes, they don't understand because of people like you who are preventing to raising valid questions. This is a valid question. You know that the world knows nothing about you. The world has not accepted you as its teacher. I told him that if you start following my advice, then I can give you valid grounds. He said, what is the valid ground? I am ready to follow your advice. I said, you do one thing. You have one disciple who continuously serves you. He was almost like a servant. You change his name. He said, but what that is going to help? I said, just listen. Call him Jagat, the world. Jagat is a common name in India. So you call him Jagat. And of course, you are his guru. By calling him Jagat, you logically become Jagat Guru. He said, this is right. Then nobody can ask me why you call yourself Jagat Guru. These fools. But in the beginning of this century, the idea was brought to the West by one of the most bogus religious movement that has ever happened in the world. It was Theosophy. Theosophy was a world movement. And Theosophy translated the word Jagat Guru in world teacher. And just as Jews are waiting for the Messiah, Buddhists are waiting after Buddha's coming. His name is going to be Maitreya. The friend. And this is the time predicted by Buddha when I will be coming back. So Theosophical movement took upon the opportunity. It is a hodgepodge of all the religions. Christianity, Mohammedanism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, from everywhere whatsoever appealing has been found, they have collected. But sometimes you can do such an idiotic thing and nose is beautiful, you cut it. Somebody else's eyes are beautiful, you take them out. Somebody's hands are beautiful, you cut his hands and go on collecting all these limbs from different people and then put them together. Do you think you will have the world's most beautiful person? You will have simply a corpse, not even alive, and a nose that may have looked on a certain face beautiful may not look beautiful in this new combination at all. The eyes, which were beautiful with some kind of hair, with some color of hair, may not look beautiful with this man at all. This hodgepodge of a man is dead, and all the parts are disconnected. There is no running thread between them. That's what Theosophy is. It has taken everything beautiful from every place possible. They did a great job. And when they came across the idea that this is the time Buddha is to come, they started, because then only their religion will be well established. Otherwise, it is only a scholarly job, few scholars working from Jainist sources, other scholars working from Buddhist sources, other scholars from Hindu sources. And it is a big job even to work from one source. There are so many Buddhist books, so many Jaina books. They are not so poor like Christians, one Bible. They are not so poor like Mohammedans, one Quran. They have thousands of books and commentaries on those books, and then commentaries on commentaries and commentaries on commentaries. For centuries, one book may have created a series of 1,000 commentaries, commentary upon another commentary. To find out the best parts is not easy. But Theosophists worked tremendously. They have one of the most precious library in Adyar, Madras, India, where they have collected all possible sources of religion. Religions which have disappeared and there is nobody as a follower, they have searched, worked. If they have not been able to find authentic sources, then from other contemporary religions, because they were constantly arguing. One religion may have disappeared, but its arguments are compiled in some other religion, contemporary religion, which is alive. From these sources, secondary sources, they started collecting, and they created a great literature, and they created a tremendous following around the world. Because people were fed up with all kinds of old religions. This was very appealing, that they have taken the most essential core of every religion and they have created theosophy. Theo means God, sophy means wisdom, wisdom about God. But unless they have a founder like Gautam Buddha, Jesus Christ, Krishna, Mahavira, Muhammad, a man of authority who can say on his own experience that this is so, they have only scholars. Those scholars can say this is written in this book, upon that page, but they themselves have no experience, so religion has no foundation. Then they started looking for somebody who can be declared Jagat Guru, a world teacher. That's how the world teacher, the word, came into English, a translation of Jagat Guru. They prepared a small boys they searched for some genius, and wherever they found a small boy who seems to be immensely talented, intellectual, and has the potentiality if he can be trained and conditioned to become. This was a strange experiment, never done before. Buddhas are born, not made. This was for the first time. They are trying to make a Buddha. But our century is accustomed with ready-made things. So they tried to tailor a Buddha. Of course, they were not perfectly certain whether this man will turn out or not. So they tried on at least 5 persons I know. Perhaps they tried on more. One of them is Jai Krishnamurti. The second was Nityananda, Jai Krishnamurti's elder brother. The third was an Anglo-Indian, and the fourth was a Ceylonese, and the fifth was also an Indian. And the sixth was a German. And they tried to train, rigorous training and discipline. Nityananda died because of that too much training. He was a fragile person, not very strong, and they were training him according to all the laws of all the religions. Anybody can go mad. He preferred to be dead. So when he was 22, he died. He died simply because of discipline, because you have to sleep 3 hours only. That you have to take 3 baths every day. That you have to eat only certain food, not everything. That you are not allowed to mix with women or touch any woman or even talk. All kinds of... One religion is enough to kill you. They had all the religions after you. And these boys were small. Krishnamurti was 9 years when they caught hold of him. Nityananda was 11 years. They both were taking a bath in the Adyar River near the headquarters of Theosophy movement. Nearby their father lived, who was a very poor man. The mother has died. And the father was in great difficulty because he has to function as a clerk the whole day and then to take care of these 2 children, prepare food for them, send them to school. And he was just looking for some opportunity if he can get some help for these children. And it came as if from God. Lead beater, who was one of the leaders of Theosophists and was thought to be a man capable to know future, and it is not right because he proved absolutely wrong. Because the 5 people he chose, all failed in one way or other. He watched these 2 boys every day, and he felt that these 2 boys can be potential victims. He suggested to Annie Besant, who was the president of this world movement, just as John the Baptist used to say that I have come just to prepare the ground for the Messiah to appear. My work is not to give you the message. My work is to prepare the ground. So when the Messiah comes, you can recognize him, and you can understand him, and you can follow him. And when Jesus came, John the Baptist initiated him and told to his people that now, the Messiah has come, my work is finished, now he takes over his work and I go into isolation. Of course, he could not go into isolation. He was caught by the Romans and beheaded. Jailed and beheaded. Because he was a very fiery man. His words were always full of fire. He was, in the real sense, a prophet plus a revolutionary. Theosophists said that our function is to prepare the ground. Soon, the Messiah, Maitreya, the friend of all, the reincarnation of Gautam Buddha, the world teacher, will appear and transform the whole world. Just the same idea, salvation, redemption, transformation, and the whole world, just his coming is needed. And he is already on the way. They did not declare, because they were themselves not certain who is going to be out of these six people. One died. If they had declared him, and he was far more intelligent than Jai Krishnamurti. If they had to choose between the two, they would have chosen Nityananda. But he died in time before they could have forced him to become the world teacher. The other, Rajgopal, another Indian, proved to be mediocre. They could see that he cannot be declared a world teacher. At the most, he can be a helper to the world teacher, but not the world teacher himself. The German fellow, seeing that they are leaning more and more towards Krishnamurti, Krishnamurti, of course, after Nityananda, was the most potential person. The German fellow, seeing that they are going to choose Krishnamurti, immediately split from the group, declared a new movement in Germany, Anthroposophy. Theosophy means, Theo means God, Sophy means wisdom. Anthroposophy means, Anthropo means man, Sophy means wisdom. He said, God and all about God is absurd, meaningless. We have to think about man. And we have to explore the wisdom hidden in man. So the German theosophical movement turned into anthroposophy, lead better, who was thought to be a knower of the future, first could not know that Nityananda is going to die. Don't waste time. They wasted 20 years for him. That this German fellow is going to create a split in the movement. Don't waste time. That Rajgopal is going to prove a mediocre. The Ceylonese was taken over back by his parents. Even Krishnamurti's father tried to take him over, and there was a case in the Madras High Court. Because when he heard that what is going on there, one boy is killed, he had given the boys, thinking that they will be well educated, will become something. He cannot make anything out of them. One boy is killed, now only one is there, and they will kill him too. These people are strange. And what goes on in their inner circle, which is not known to anybody outside. Krishnamurti was not allowed even to meet to his father, because a world teacher should be above all attachments. He has no father, no mother. That's how Jesus behaves with his mother. His mother comes to see him, hearing that he is speaking in the town, and there is a crowd, and somebody in the crowd says, "Jesus, your mother is standing out and she wants to see you." And how ugly it looks that Jesus says, "Tell that woman that I have no mother. I have only my Father who is above in heaven." They were teaching the same to Krishnamurti. Finally, he had no other resort except to go to the court, that my son should be returned. But it was British rule in India. Who listens to a poor Indian? And Annie Besant was a very powerful woman. Powerful in England, powerful in India, powerful around the world. George Bernard Shaw wanted to marry her. She refused. He was below her. She was the president of Indian National Congress. Even though she was English, and the Indian National Congress was fighting against the British, she was so much respected in India that she was chosen the president of Indian National Congress. And she was the president of the Theosophical World Movement. So naturally, it was very difficult. The case went on and on, from one court to another court, from High Court to Supreme Court. From Supreme Court, she took away the case to Privy Council, which was in London. That was very cunning. That was the last resort above Supreme Court of India. The Privy Council was in England. she took away the case there. And because the case was going to be fought now in England, she took away Krishnamurti to England. Once he was outside India, then no Indian law was applicable. He still carries a British passport, the same that was given to him by Annie Besant. He is a British citizen because Annie Besant made him a British citizen, so that nothing from India can bother him in any way. Krishnamurti was going to be declared the world teacher. Great preparations were made in 1925 in Holland, a world conference called of all the theosophists. 6,000 representatives from every country from the world gathered there for this great event. Krishnamurti is going to declare himself the world teacher, and immediately there is going to be tremendous transformation in the world. But Krishnamurti was also tired with these theosophists. They have been as nasty to him as anyone can be. And it was not his desire. It was imposed upon him forcibly. Books were written in his name by others, and he had to sign them. He was going to be the world teacher. He has to show some wisdom before he declares. So there is a book, At the Feet of the Master. Krishnamurti does not remember at all that he ever wrote that book. And that is one of the best books Theosophy has produced. It is a rare masterpiece. Must have been the work of Leadbetter, because he was a master writer, master orator. Or perhaps many people may have joined together. The book is of immense value in itself. Who wrote it does not matter. But Krishnamurti does not even remember. He says that 3 hours of his sleep, and the whole day he was feeling sleepy, and they were chanting mantras, and they were reading Tibetan scriptures and Chinese scriptures and telling him the meaning, and he was not there at all. He was almost in a state of zombie. And they were taking signatures from him on all kinds of things. He took good revenge. At the first day of the meeting, he stood up and declared that I am not the world teacher at all. And I dissolve the organization that has been created for me. A special organization, a Star of the East, a wing of theosophical movement, was created especially for the world teacher, it will have offices all over the world, secretaries, funds, lands, everything that Krishnamurti as a world teacher needs. He was donated castles, palaces, and this whole wing of thousands of people he dissolved. And he returned all the castles and all the palaces back to their owners. And he said, I'm finished with it. Leadbeater failed again. And why he became so adamant against the idea of world teacher, these theosophies made him. It was a constant torture. This was for the first time he was free to speak before the world audience. Now they cannot do anything else. Any Besant started crying and weeping. But what you can do? And he was saying yes, yes, up to the last moment. And at the last moment, he just turned 180 degrees and said that I am nobody's teacher. The theosophists must have tortured him, really, for his own sake. He still carries the scars. They are not healed. Krishnamurti is not healed yet. He is still angry against all those people who are dead long ago. No one of them is alive. But he carries those years with them from the 9th year to his 25th year were too much, because they were trying to compress the whole wisdom of the world into him. And wisdom does not happen that way. They were filling him, forcing him, trying that he memorizes everything. And he was doing whatsoever they were saying because he was at their mercy. All that together became a revolt. And the scars have gone so deep and the wounds are so deep. I feel sorry for him. What those theosophists did is not of much importance now. They are all dead, have been dead for at least 40 years, all of them. The theosophical movement has dispersed. It has no grounds. I feel sorry for Krishnamurti. If he can get rid of that anger, that rage, his unfoldment will not be complete. He has to get out of this trap. It is only a memory. But he is so trapped in the memory. Otherwise, he is immensely an intelligent man. But the memory surrounds him from everywhere. So anything resembling, and he immediately loses his temperament. It has been happening. My sannyasins go to listen to him. If they ask me, I say, certainly, you can go anywhere. If you don't ask me which movie you are going to see, why you should be bothered, to whom you are going to listen, go. And particularly to Krishnamurti, you go and sit in front. They don't know why I say sit in front. When for the first time it happened in Bombay, that few of my sannyasins asked, I said, you go and sit in the front. They said, but why? I said, that I will tell you later on. They went and they sat the whole line, front row. And the moment Krishnamurti saw the red, orange, the color of sannyasins, and he was so angry. And he started against sannyas and against the master and the disciple. The sannyasins were shocked. What has happened? He was going to speak on some other subject. He forgot everything. He spoke on this subject. And since then it has been happening almost everywhere, because now my sannyasins are everywhere, wherever he goes. He finds my sannyasins and he behaves just like the bull. You saw the red flag. He immediately seeing a red sannyasin is a bull in a china shop. Then he loses all control. Then he forgets against whom he is speaking. These people have not done anything to him. I have not done anything to him. But the people whom he thought were his masters, the people to whom he was taught to surrender and be a disciple, the people to whom he was forced in every possible way to be committed, their ghosts are following him. Unless he gets rid of those ghosts, he will not be able to blossom fully. Then something inside remains tethered to the dead, to the past. And a man tethered to the past, to the dead, cannot be fully alive. He is carrying so much dead weight that he cannot see the present, he cannot see anything else. I am not a world teacher. I am not a teacher at all, because I don't teach you anything. Teaching means conditioning you.
Teaching means giving you a certain doctrinaire. Teaching means words, ideologies, philosophies. I'm not giving you anything. Whatever I am doing is trying to destroy everything that you may have gathered from somewhere. You may have gathered from me. Because you are such a gatherer. Like a magnet. Things simply just go on clinging to you. They come from all directions. And I want to destroy this state of continuous gathering crap. But so difficult. The day I declared the Sambodhi Sansad, the Senate of the Enlightened Ones, I declared few names just as a joke too. But people are so foolish. I declare Soumendra that he is enlightened, although he is no more a sannyasin. And do you know what happened? Actually what I was thinking. Exactly predictable. He wrote immediately a letter. Suddenly I became beloved Bhagwan. It has happened. In the letter, that was the only content again and again. It has happened. Now, enlightenment does not happen that way. It is not est. Where it happens. And very easily, $250. And 2 weekends. And it happens. That's how it happened to Werner Erhard. He must have seen the Indian gurus doing great business in California. It happened to him too. Looking at his name, you will think he is a German, Werner Erhard. He is not. He is a Jew. He changed his name. Good strategy. Only a Jew can do it. Now, being a Jew, who was going to listen to him? And who has ever heard a Jew becoming enlightened? He changed his name. He dropped his family, his wife, father, mother, escaped from there. And of course, California is the right place for it to happen. And since then, to everybody and anybody, it is happening. When you pay $250, you cannot say it has not happened. That looks looks stupid. Then why you paid $250? Soumindra did the same immediately, the letter. It has happened. And what I was expecting, he wrote a letter to Tirtha too, asking, has it happened to you or not? Because he was continuously in competition with Tirtha, that was his trouble. He has not dropped out of sannyas for any other reason. It was the competitiveness with Tirtha. He wanted to be somehow above Tirtha. And he tried in every possible way. But when he could not manage, so the second letter comes to Tirtha on the same date. Has it happened to you or not yet? And I have not included Tirtha in the Sambodhi Synod knowingly. These two letters I was waiting for. You don't need a certificate for enlightenment. Who has heard? Never in the history it has happened this way that you receive a certificate that you are enlightened. And fools believe immediately. Fools are, after all, fools. And remember, it is not only about Soumindra. It is about you all, about everybody. Remember, the ego plays very subtle games. The games are so subtle, and the work is sometimes very delicate. It is almost like brain surgery, perhaps finer than that. In brain surgery, if your hand trembles a little, it may cut thousands of tissues inside the brain. Your hand has to remain absolutely untrembling. And you have to be perfectly certain where your instrument is going. Because in this small skull, you have 7 million cells. And all those cells are contributing to your life. And everything is controlled from these 7 million cells. Your sex, your love, your poetry, your mathematics, your pain, your pleasure, everything is being controlled from those in the head. Whatever you feel on your hand is not really felt there. It is felt in the head, projected there. So now there are brain surgeons who say that it is within our control now to put electrodes in your head. This is one of the mysterious phenomena about the brain, that it is absolutely insensitive. Once your skull is opened, you can put any instrument inside you will not feel. Because the inner structure of the brain has no sensitivity. If something is left there, you will never feel it. In Second World War, it happened after the World War, 3 years after. Immense head was opened. For some other reasons, he was having some growth which was creating trouble, headaches, and his eyesight was being affected. So for the growth, whether it is cancerous or not, his head was opened. They were puzzled. It was a bullet, and around the bullet the growth has happened. Just to cover it. But the man for 3 years was unaware that he is carrying a bullet in his head. The bullet must have gone there in a military hospital. He must have been treated as if there is just a wound. And the wound was treated and the bullet remained. Now, brain surgeons say you can put an electrode. There are 700 very significant points in your skull, inside. Those 700 points control your whole life. These are exactly the 700 acupuncture centers on the body. So what acupuncture does, has been doing in China for centuries, is trying through the body to manipulate the brain centers. Each brain center is connected to a certain center in the body. So, for example, when you are having a sexual orgasm, you think it is happening in your genitals, you are wrong. It is happening in your head. Now it is possible to put an electrode at the sex center in your brain and give you a remote control which you can carry in your pocket. Anytime you push it and you will have immediately a sexual orgasm. Far stronger. It depends on you how much you push. You can have it as much as you want. You will be surprised that when this experiment was done by Delgado on a white mouse, it's strange why they do on white mouse. Perhaps they think black mouses are not so intelligent or something. The white mouse is fixed with an electrode at his sex center in the brain, and he is shown the button in front of him. Just he has to put his feet on the pedal and he will have a sexual orgasm. Can you believe in 1 hour? He tried 700 times and died. What else you can expect? It was such a great joy. He forgot about eating. Food was placed around him. Water. He won't look. Beautiful white females. No interest at all. Because what this button is giving has never happened before. And it was in his control. He could go on pressing it deeper, 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 and it can go on endlessly. All these religions up to now have been simply working on these brain centers, not knowing, putting ideas at certain centers in your mind through exercises, disciplines, fasting. Yoga is nothing but changing your body chemistry and making it possible that you start controlling your mind centers. That's why a yogi can remain hungry as long as he wants. It is not that he is hungry, he simply goes on pressing through a certain discipline that he has learned. You may not be aware of it. The discipline is such. He knows the posture in which to sit. And then, in that posture, hunger cannot happen. In that posture, a particular brain center is pressed and you feel as if you have just eaten. He can remain without water for days. He can remain without breathing. He can drink any kind of poison that can kill a person immediately as it touches the tongue. He can drink the poison as much as you want. And yogis have been photographed, x-rayed. The poison simply does not touch them at all. It simply goes through their system without affecting the system at all. Because they know what to do with the system. They have prepared the body in such a way. An arduous, difficult, year-long processes, but they have done it. They have tried it. Mohammedan fakirs cut their tongue underneath where it is joined. Slowly they go on cutting it. A time comes when the tongue is no more joined. When it is no more joined, then it can be turned up to close the nose from behind. Then you cannot breathe. The mouth is closed, the nose is closed. But in that particular position, the tongue presses a certain center in your brain which makes it possible that you can exist, remain alive without breathing. All the religions have been doing things with you which you may not be aware of. In fact, even the so-called teachers may not be aware what they are doing. But the effects are there. But this has nothing to do with realization, enlightenment, awareness, realization. It has nothing to do with knowing the truth of your being and the being of the whole universe. So remember, when I am saying anything, for example, I use the name of Soumendra, so don't simply laugh at Soumendra. It has nothing to do with Soumendra. You have to watch yourself. Santos is here. What he wrote, you know. Exactly predictable. I knew that he is going to write this. He wrote, Bhagwan, I am not much impressed by the declaration that I am enlightened. But I am very much impressed that I have been included in the council of the enlightened ones. Now, can you see the contradiction? First, I am not impressed by being declared enlightened. Then why you are bothering to write to me at all? Because nobody else has written. You want me to show that you are not impressed, you are far above. Enlightenment is far below you. You are not impressed by it. But you are impressed, otherwise there is no necessity for writing this letter. Why waste paper? Why waste this letter? If you are not impressed, good. I have not declared you enlightened to be impressed. And in the same sentence he says, but I am impressed that I am included in the council of the enlightened ones. Why you are impressed that you are included in the council of the enlightened ones? If you are not impressed by enlightenment, then what this council means to you? It does not mean anything. If enlightenment does not mean anything, then why being included in the council means so much to you? You cannot hide anything from me. You are impressed by enlightenment. If your name was not declared, you would have been in the same position as Soumendra. He always wanted that he should be the chief disciple. So desperately. And my trouble is there are no chief disciples here. There is no teacher, no taught. So what is the point of being chief? Who is chief? disciple. Nobody is a chief disciple. And why you should be impressed by inclusion into the committee? The same ego comes from the back door. You are pushing it from the front door, that I am not impressed, that will be egoistic to be impressed. You are pushing it from the front door. It said, okay, I am coming from the back door. And it has come immediately in the same sentence. My effort here is such that it can be only called absolutely thankless job. I have to hit you, I have to hurt you, I have to remove so much cancer in your consciousness. And you go on watering it. I'm trying to remove it some way. And you are trying somehow to grow it. Even in the name of egolessness, the ego comes in. Now, Sumindra is spreading all over Europe the news that he is declared enlightened. Just now he has gathered 150 persons in Holland and many sannyasins in it, most of them sannyasins. He has become enlightened. Have you ever heard that people become enlightened by certificates? Have I got any certificate from anybody? It is not a question of certificates. It is not a question of declaration. It is a question of your realization. And the moment you receive my letter, it happens. And now when he will hear it, what I am saying today, then it will disappear. The third letter I received was from Gunakar, Germany, who has become many times enlightened, many times unenlightened. Each time he goes to Germany, he becomes enlightened. Then he was coming back. And when he will come to me, and I will explain to him, and he will say, yes, it is foolish, but what to do? The urge. And he will become unenlightened again. Since I have come to America, he has not turned up. Perhaps of the fear, because whenever he comes to me, he becomes unenlightened. When he goes to Germany, Germany is far better. He has a beautiful castle and few sannyasins taking care of him. And he becomes enlightened, and they all recognize his enlightenment. I have received his letter. He is so angry because he was in a great competition, the same competition as Sumindra was with Tirtha, Gunakar was with Sumindra. Both were candidates for enlightenment. Now Sumindra has received it, Gunakar is very angry letter. I want to drop sannyas and I want to forget all this. how come Sumindra has become enlightened? No, what trouble it is to you if Sumindra becomes enlightened? Let him become. But before Gunakar, it is not possible. And he has been declaring himself enlightened many times, but he needs a certificate. That's what the letter is for, that urgently a certificate is otherwise, how he is going to fight with Sumindra? They have been exchanging letters and writing strange things to each other, showing that this is how enlightenment is. Absurd things, meaningless things, both were doing the same job. I told both of them, don't waste time. This is not a way to prove your enlightenment. And even if you convince Sumindra that you are enlightened, will you be enlightened? Or if Sumindra convinces you that he is enlightened, will that be his enlightenment? Then it is very simple mutual understanding. You both recognize each other enlightened and be finished with it. It is only a problem between you two. No. It is difficult for you to understand me. My ways, my devices, it is difficult for you to see what I am doing, why I am doing. Whatsoever is happening around here is only for one thing. That you become unburdened of all that burdens you. Soul light, as if you have grown wings and you can fly. The only right comment came from Maitreya. He said, Bhagwan is naughty. That's true.
The word content and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.